With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from The New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich.
This week, we're going to be talking about the Netflix adaptation of A Series of Unfortunate Events and the BBC's new TV version of The Worst Witch.
Caroline has also listened to the MTV podcast Speed Dial, so she'll be talking to us about that later in the show. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. Last week we talked about La La Land and we've had a few people tweet and email us to say that they really enjoyed it as well. Rosie Howarth emailed to say, "Thanks for talking about La La Land. I agree with a lot of what you said about the emotion and style of the film. Like Caroline, I cried / grinned most of the way through." And she also says that it hit home with her because she's a professional musician, which I imagine would be the case for lots of people.
Yeah, that's really interesting because there have been lots of people on Twitter and stuff in my wider networks who have not enjoyed the film.
Yeah, same.
And I've kind of been half typing replies to them and then deleting them because people are allowed to not like stuff that I like.
It's really hard, that, isn't it?
Yes, yes, I know.
They are.
Oh, I didn't tell you about the most hilarious thing that happened in one of the screenings I went to, where just as the film was starting, a very old man got up and said in a kind of drunk sounding way, "I just think everybody should know that the La La stands for Los Angeles." And then he sat down to a burst of ironic applause.
That is so funny. Oh, well, you wouldn't have known, so...
I know. I mean, it would not have been obvious at all from the film's marketing.
So, thanks to that guy.
Thanks to that man. We've also had an email from Anya about something we talked about last week, and I believe the week before too, which is Sherlock. So she says... "Just a quick email to say, I know you said you weren't going to slate Sherlock every week, but I really, really feel we have to address the shitmongous that that last episode was. It reminded me of an Old Spice advert with none of the charm."
That is such a funny comparison.
So I think this is in reference to Series 4, Episode 3, right?
I have not seen Series 4, Episode 3.
Me neither. I actually, last night, got my Sherlock fixed by watching Toby Jones be really evil in Episode 2, which I do agree with you, is quite good.
Yeah. So I'm not really keen to return to episode 3 if it's an Old Spice advert with none of the charm. So still bad.
Still bad. And
This just in. Sherlock, still bad. Apparently.
If you agree/disagree with Anya, get in touch and tell us. And speaking of things we would like your opinions on, Tim has sent an email with a really interesting question in it. He says that he has... really reevaluated The Night Manager. He really loved it when it first aired, but after seeing that it got all the Golden Globes and stuff, he thought back on it and realized that actually it wasn't all that. And now he says, "Are there any series/films that you loved initially, but 6 months down the line totally changed your mind?"
That's such a good question. I can't instinctively think of anything recently that falls into that category to me. But I remember being a child and watching Life is Beautiful, the like Holocaust film, and thinking it was amazing. And then I was probably only about 14 or something. My cousin's husband informed me that it was like very controversial because it was considered to be like making a mockery of the Holocaust, which is just not something I'd known when we watched it at school. And then I had real doubts about my loving of that film afterwards.
I think mine is a lot more recent, and it is The Get Down.
Oh, yeah.
So... when we reviewed it on the podcast, I think we both felt it was a bit overblown and long, but that somewhere buried in there was a really good show. And I have to say, having since watched a couple more episodes and imbibed a lot of the work of Doreen St. Felix, I now agree with her that it's crap.
Ah. I wasn't sure which way that was going to go, because a lot of people on my Twitter feed like absolutely love it. And I still think the visuals are really fun.
It looks beautiful. Mm. I think in one of her pieces, Doreen says like it would be a great thing to like project on the wall at a party.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I totally agree with that.
That's a very accurate description. Okay, well, listeners, if you have thoughts of something you've changed your mind on, we'd love to hear it.
So just briefly, we've also heard from Manuela, who gets in touch to recommend something that I had never heard of before, and this sounds completely like outside of the realm of what I normally know about. And I'm probably going to say the title of it wrong because it's in Norwegian, but it's spelled S-K-A-M.
So, Skam?
Skam? Scam? Apparently it means shame. In Norwegian. And it is, she says, a multi-platform TV series that uses social media as a storytelling device along with the traditional scripted televised format.
This can be really iffy, right?
Yeah.
Can go one way or the other.
So it follows a group of Norwegian teenagers in an upper middle class suburb of Oslo. And she says, clips of the episode premiere online throughout the week on the broadcaster's website in real time. So if a party's happening at 2 a.m, then the clip appears at that time, along with character Instagram posts and text messages. Then on the Friday, the clips are collated together to form a 20 to 30 minute episode that is aired on TV.
Mm.
So as you say, this could go either way. Like, it could be amazing, or it could be like watching a load of managed Instagram accounts tweet at each other.
Interesting.
So anyway, it sounds really interesting. There are apparently bits of it on YouTube and on Tumblr. People are translating it. And there is an American version currently in development. But she says, we don't talk about that.
Ah. We've also had an email in from Sean, who wanted to recommend One Day at a Time, which is a Netflix series. She says it's very funny, but also deals with difficult issues such as PTSD, returning soldiers, sexuality, and family reactions to coming out. So lots in there. But she also says that she is loving the Netflix series we mentioned last episode, A Series of Unfortunate Events, which is actually what we're going to talk about next.
It is indeed. So this is the new Netflix adaptation of Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. It's based on the series of children's novels by the same name and stars Neil Patrick Harris as Count Olaf, Joan Cusack as Justice Strauss, and Patrick Warburton as Lemony Snicket himself. This first series of 8 episodes adapts books 1 through 4, and there are 2 more series in the works.
Hello, my name is Lemony Snicket, and once again I find myself in a dimly lit room talking to a complete stranger. The complete stranger is you, and the room belongs to Netflix, a company responsible for filming A Series of Unfortunate Events. Under ordinary circumstances, this room would be buzzing with excitement and activity as directors, designers, stagehands, and indentured servants prepare for a dazzling season of top-notch entertainment. The story of the Baudelaire orphans is so upsetting and so utterly unnerving. The entire crew is suffering from low morale, a phrase which here means currently under medical observation for melancholia, ennui, and acute wistfulness.
Joy, joy, happiness, my fortune's about to change.
Almost everyone.
I am loving this show.
Mm-hmm. Same here. I told you quite a boring story just now before we came on air about how mad I was that I was not able to download the rest of the series to watch on the train last night.
Yeah, it's really, really good. We both enjoyed the original books, didn't we?
Yeah.
And for me, this is very in keeping with the tone of those stories, right down to the tiny details, and it's similarly dense like the books.
It is. I love how dense it is. And I love how the TV format, particularly the streaming TV format, as opposed to the film. The film adaptation from 2004, was it? I quite liked, because I liked the stories. And I thought some of the... I quite like Meryl Streep in it, for instance. Mm-hmm. But because it was a feature film, they tried to give it an arc that wasn't there. Whereas the TV format allows it to be episodic and repetitive in all of the ways that the books are.
I think what's quite funny about this series and therefore this show is that the plots are very predictable and very unpredictable at the same time. Mm. So you get this kind of overarching frame that you can kind of rely on, which is orphans get sent to live with New Guardian. New Guardian is infiltrated by Count Olaf. New Guardian probably dies. Count Olaf nearly gets away with being their new guardian in a disguise before he's ultimately thwarted at the last minute. That's a very predictable narrative for each of these two-parters. But within that, you've got like all these like crazy things happening, like, you know, houses collapsing and vipers escaping and things that you probably wouldn't be able to see coming.
And every time you learn a bit more about both the personalities of the children, Violet, Klaus and Sunny, and also about the mystery of their disappeared, presumed dead parents, mm-hmm. and this secret organisation with spyglasses that seems to be sort of watching out for them from the margins of the story.
Yeah, there's something about that I found so delicious as a child. This like weird secret organisation that, you know, it's called the VFD, but what it stands for changes constantly, and we don't know whether it's the goodies or the baddies, and that kind of drip feeding of information and the constant red herrings. You're given a lot of red herrings in this series all the time. I really, really enjoyed, and I think they carry that over well in the series, as well as all the tiny little details of like self-referential Lemony Snicket commentary, people explaining what words means, even though it's perfectly obvious what they mean, and then Lemony Snicket explaining what actually difficult to understand phrases mean, but in a very esoteric and not very clear or widely applicable style.
So that's an important creative decision they've made about this TV series, as opposed to the previous film adaptation, which is to put Lemony Snicket in the frame again. Because in the books, he's there all the time. Mm-hmm. You referred to it this morning as postmodern, and it is very much that. Like the author interjects himself between you and the page at all times. In the film, they took that away.
He is there. He's played by Jude Law.
Oh, yeah, right. There's that sequence at the beginning where he's typing. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he sometimes like interjects with his typewriter breaking. But I think that's something really funny to read a book with a meta narrative about the person writing the book, and then make a film about it and be like, okay, we've got to have this guy writing the book. What they do in this TV series is they say, okay, here's this meta narrative about the guy writing the book you're reading, so we'll have a meta narrative about the TV show being made of the TV show you're watching, which makes instinctively so much more sense.
It's sort of like he's directing it, right? He constantly walks into shot wearing a costume that sort of tones with the background. So if they're on a beach, he's wearing a bathing outfit. If they're in a jungle, he's wearing an explorer outfit, you know, and he talks in front of the action and explains what's happening, or like gives you a gnomic hint as to where you're going next, or says something sad.
Yeah, and it's funny to watch a TV show and hear someone say, so for example, there's a line where Count Olaf is like, they're going to the movies, and he's like, of course it's more convenient to watch things in the comfort of your own home. Mm. And there's another bit where Aunt Josephine says, yes, children, let's all shut our eyes as though we're watching something on a screen that is much too scary for our age. And these kinds of things are so much funnier than like a guy like failing to write on a typewriter, because they include you in this in-joke, which is what Lemony Snicket's doing all the time in that writing. He's really making the readers feel included in their in-joke when he says metaphors like, I don't know, in the Lake Lacrimosa episode, he might be like, it was terribly irritating, like the feeling of a leech sucking on your... All these metaphors draw on very specific actions that are happening in the book at the same time. And all of that continues in this series, which means that I feel like often I haven't even had a chance to get one joke before they're making another. And I love that feeling of just like there's so much going on at any one moment.
So a trope that the book Lemony Snicket uses a lot is like, look away, don't read this. It's going to be really horrible. The plight of these orphans is really unhappy. And why are you even reading this?
That scared me when I was a kid,
I know,
genuinely.
Me too.
When it was please do not read this book. You might not be able to cope with what's inside. I was like, I definitely won't be able to cope. I'm going to put it down.
I've never been told by a book not to read it before. Obviously, in this case, they translate it to don't watch. But in a way that I love, Neil Patrick Harris sings the theme tune.
It's very Dr. Horrible, isn't it? Yes. For fans of Dr. Horrible.
He sings the theme tune, and the whole theme tune is like, look away, look
it's
away.
Great.
It's about how you should watch, but it also provides you with a plot recap, so it's different every time.
Yeah.
Which is very clever, because who among us has not fast-forwarded through a Netflix credit sequence, because it's the same and you've watched four episodes already that day.
Yeah, exactly. But I love that level of detail, like the fact that even the theme tune has all these like little secret nods to stuff. And also, like the book, it's very referential to other things. So there are references in this to like Herman Melville or Murakami, all these like literary authors, in the same way that the books were. And it's also very self-referential. So there are lots of little lines that readers of the books will know have lots of significance, like when they're in the Anxious Clown restaurant, the waiter says, I didn't know this was a sad occasion. And if you've read the books, you know that that's like a secret code and you're meant to reply with, the world is quiet here. But nobody does in this TV series because they're not at a point where they know that yet, or they're trying to hide that they know that. There are little lines about Count Olaf losing his sugar bowl, which readers of the book know that sugar bowl has like a really big importance later on. And so I love that there's all these little in-jokes for audiences, whether you've just started watching the show or whether you're a lifelong fan of the books, there'll be some lines in there just for you.
And just more than anything, though, it retains its ability to surprise and shock you. Mm-hmm. So just one example of this, I think it's in the second part of the Uncle Monty episodes.
The reptile room ones.
Where Klaus and Violet are kind of looking in despair out of a window at some point, and they're looking out onto this maze that's outside Uncle Monty's house, and they see this golden statue of a woman looking through a spyglass standing at the centre of the maze above the hedges. And, you know, you see it through windows and in the background various times during the episode. And then right near the end, they've been desperately trying to find Count Olaf in the maze, and they get to the middle, and the woman just, like, jumps off the podium and starts talking to them. And it turns out she's a character you've already met, painted gold, and she's been standing there the whole time. Mm. And I was on a train when I was watching this, and I genuinely went,
yeah,
when that happened, and felt that kind of childlike feeling of, like, wow, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Which is just so pleasurable. And actually, I realised, really rare.
Definitely. And I think it's so easy to talk about all the, like, irony and references in this stuff in a way that makes it sound very, very self-conscious and not genuinely funny. Whereas there is a lot of, I think, especially in, like, Neil Patrick Harris's performance, which is so good. Because I actually really liked Jim Carrey's Count Olaf in the film. Because a lot of people, I don't know, didn't seem to, but I thought he was great. But Neil Patrick Harris is just brilliant. He's so funny and just in a raised eyebrow can bring, like, a lot of, like, I do genuinely laugh out loud when I'm watching this. It's not like just like I'm sat there like, ooh, haha, see what you did there, Snicket. It's like very funny.
So I read in an interview or somewhere with Daniel Handler, the, you know, the real Lemony Snicket, that he was inspired to try and cast Neil Patrick Harris when he saw his 2011 opening number at the Emmys, which I don't know if you've seen. It's an original song called Theatre's Not Just for Gays Anymore. And it's a whole, like, song and dance number in which Neil Patrick Harris, joined by the companies of various musicals, enacts the scenario in which going to Broadway is no longer just, like, a thing you do with your boring out-of-town relatives, or if you're gay, it's now, like, a pastime for everybody. And Handler says something like, you know, when I saw him do that, I knew that he could handle being funny and serious at the same time and having multiple strands of plot going on at the same time as well. Mm-hmm. And I just knew he could do it. And I went back and watched that, and I was like, yeah, this is the origin story of NPH's Count Olaf right here.
Oh, that's so fun to watch that transition in action. Yeah, even just, like, the simplest lines. Like, I loved when he was like, is that a harpoon gun? He can just say things with an inflection that's really funny. And then 5 minutes later, you'll be like, wait, a harpoon gun is really significant for readers of the book. So yeah, it's everything I wanted from a Series of Unfortunate Events adaptation.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Action.
You may think that the Baudelaires ought to prevail and be tucked someplace all safe and sound. Count Olaf captured and rotting in jail, his hench people nowhere around.
But there's no happy endings, not here and not now. This tale is all sorrows and woes. You dream that justice and peace win the day, but that's not how the story goes.
So the next thing we're going to talk about, much anticipated by Caroline and I, is The Worst Witch, which is a new CBBC adaptation of Jill Murphy's story. It follows the journey of Mildred Hubble, here played by Game of Thrones' Bella Ramsey, as she struggles to practice magic as effortlessly as her peers. This series comes after another very popular adaptation of the novels in the late 90s, which me and Caroline both watched at the time.
Yeah, absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I also read all the books and were completely obsessed with them.
Yeah, they're great books. There's less than I realised. Mm. I thought that this was like a huge, you know, like 27 book series and that I probably just read a few, but actually there were only a few released and they're still going to this day, but it's only like number 5 and number 6 or something.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It's a very simple story, right? It starts at Miss Cackle's Academy for Witches, and it's Mildred Hubble's first day and her induction, basically. And she feels as though she can't do anything right. She's always falling off her broomstick and her cat's the wrong colour and blah, blah, blah. This one starts a little bit before that. It gives us a little bit more backstory and fleshes out the idea of why Mildred Hubble might feel like she's the worst witch, other than not being great at stuff, magic. And it begins with Mildred living on a council estate with her mum, and this other girl accidentally flies onto her balcony, Maud, who is the best friend in the original series. And Mildred is not actually, has not grown up thinking she's a witch. There's no magic seemingly in her family, but the fact that she can see Maud suggests that there is some magic in her somewhere. So she goes along with Maud, helps her get there, and ends up at Miss Cackle's Academy trying to pass the admissions exam. Which I really liked as a backstory.
I did as well. And I feel like it told you more about the characters before mm-hmm. you settle down into the like day-to-day stuff of them being at the school trying to learn. You know, you got a kind of dramatic first episode in a way that I think if you'd never seen or heard of this story before would help you feel drawn into the world.
The original story does start very much like in media res at the first totally, day of school. Yeah. Whereas this is kind of a bit... I agree. I think that there's something that eases you into the story, and at the same time it fleshes out the world because it gives you an idea that there might be people like Mildred who are basically the equivalent of muggles in the Harry Potter world who might feel really insecure about, you know, she's a bit of a Neville figure.
Yeah, she is.
Neville's not a muggle born, so that's rubbish.
Well, in the sense of her magical abilities and confidence.
She's got the backstory of Hermione and the confidence of Neville, basically.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. Because in the original books, now I come to think of it, you don't really get any mention of the quote-unquote normal world, do you?
No.
It all takes place in the academy within the magical community, essentially. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, you know, from Mildred's flat, she can see the castle where Miss Cackle's Academy mm-hmm. takes place. But obviously, you know, her mum, who isn't magical, can't see it and stuff. So you get this sense of like the two worlds rubbing up against each other.
And we do know that children love that. That there's a reason why children loved writing out fake Hogwarts letters, acceptance letters for themselves. There's something really irresistible about this idea that you could be that person, you just don't know it yet.
Yeah, well, there's a reason why, you know, children of all ages and maybe even adults sometimes climb into cupboards to see
if there's anything at the back.
That's the way to Narnia, you know. Just the idea that pure luck and chance and fate might mean that the next door you open would lead you into a magical world, you know.
Exactly. I have to say the lead in this is really great, I think.
Yeah, she's really good.
Game of Thrones fans might recognise Bella Ramsey as Lyanna Mormont, who is the Lady of Bear Island in Game of Thrones. Yeah. So there's this moment basically where Jon Snow needs support and Bear Island pledge their support, and then he realizes that Bear Island is basically led by an 8-year-old girl. But she's like really, really spunky and really, really inspires a lot of the other men. So it's a really great role that she plays absolutely amazingly. And she plays a completely different sort of character in this. She's like very nervy and anxious. But again, she's really, really good. There's just like a spark in her that I really, really like.
And I think I've only watched a couple of episodes, but which are already on iPlayer, you can go mm-hmm. check them out. But she already has quite a good like antagonistic dynamic with Ethel Hallow.
Yeah, who is just the villain of the series. And fans of the 1998 series will remember Ethel Hallow was played by Felicity Jones brilliantly.
Yeah, absolutely brilliantly. I have to say, it is still Felicity Jones's defining role for me.
Yes.
So I have not seen Rogue One, but I've seen a lot of posters for Rogue One. And I like to think in my head like, Ethel Hallow goes intergalactic is the subline of the movie.
It's one of those things where often with children's stuff you look back and you realize that the villain was so much more an interesting character and probably the one you would root for as an adult. And there's something about Ethel Hallow who's like basically an academic perfectionist who is needlessly mean to Mildred all the time. No idea why she's so horrible to her, but she's just so smart and so like edgy and like sparky that I do really like her.
And there's a bit of backstory given to her in this first episode of this where, you know, she's got a really perfect older sister. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point, you know, she gets like 100% on her entrance exam and someone says, oh, well done, you got 100%. That's amazing. And she goes, no, for a Hallow, it's just okay.
Yeah.
So you get this idea that she's almost like a Malfoy figure. You know, she comes from this perfect, amazing family where just doing amazingly is, you know, barely acceptable.
Yeah, and she's a perfectionist. And I think that there's a really good element of discussion about perfectionism amongst women in this series and in this show, where you get the sense that Mildred's really bad at everything. And actually, she's not. She's pretty good at most stuff. She's just basically got a bad case of imposter syndrome, right? Where she's constantly worrying about how well she's doing. And then you contrast that with this portrayal of Ethel, who's basically like, this is where perfectionism can ultimately take you, to like a life of like not being satisfied with 100%. So I think that is quite encouraging in a way. Like, I'm quite glad that there might be a new generation of young girls watching this show and being told that it's okay to come across like you're not doing everything perfectly, and B, it's okay to not do everything perfectly, which I think is a good message.
It is a good message, because we should stress, for anyone thinking they're going to go watch this, this is a children's TV series. It is an excellent children's TV series, but it is, you know, nonetheless, like, it's probably, it's like age ranges like 8 to 12.
Yeah, and so the plots reflect that. The big surprises are not surprising to adults. You had some thoughts that the special effects were not so good. I was actually quite impressed by the special effects.
I think by like CBBC standards, the special effects are excellent, and obviously like far surpass what was on offer in my own childhood. But I do think that to an eye accustomed to like a series of unfortunate events, say, or Game of Thrones or whatever, it will look a bit shonky.
Yeah, though one point we should mention is that Netflix have got a stake in this show.
Oh, have they?
Which I think is why it's got this sort of caliber of cast, and, you know, there's an extra spark to this that raises it above, well, I'm not currently watching a lot of CBBC content, so it would be harsh of me to say to raise it above current CBBC content, but my experience of CBBC content. And I think, I'm sure there's like an increased budget there from Netflix.
I definitely think so, but I would encourage anyone who fondly remembers the book or the old TV series, or thinks that, you know, young witches dealing with imposter syndrome sounds like something you can get on board with, definitely go and check it out. Is it something that I would like them to keep making more of? So I want it to be supported.
So last week, I encouraged Caroline to give Speed Dial, the pop culture podcast from MTV, a listen. Caroline, did you do that?
I did, and I really, really enjoyed it. I can't believe I haven't been listening to this podcast the whole time.
I sort of feel like there was no way you weren't going to enjoy it, seeing as you enjoy the work of both writers and pop culture podcasts in general.
Yeah, this is true. So they've done 30 episodes now. I didn't obviously have time to listen to all of them, so I tried to listen to like...
That's a lot. I feel like it's such a recent podcast, but I guess it's actually ticking along.
I think they've done like one a week for like, you know, getting on for more than half a year. Yeah, so I listened to the one just after Brad and Angelina split up.
Good choice.
And I listened to their big year-end review, and I listened to a couple of, like, election ones. Because, my life would have been so much better if in November 2016 I was listening to this podcast.
I really loved the episode they did where they recommended stuff for us to, like, read, for people to read. And I, made loads of notes and went away and read a lot of the stuff that they suggested. Some of it was like stuff, you know, that I definitely knew about and just hadn't got around to reading. Some of it was things that I just like would never have heard of if it wasn't for them. So sort of a welcome change from their weekly format in that time. I think it's good that they acknowledged that there was something so big going on that they sort of had to shake things up a little bit.
Yeah, and they are brilliant, sharp, generous commentators on whatever subject they're talking about. And so it's Doreen St. Felix and Ira Madison III, and I think one of them is based on the East Coast and one on the West Coast. And the sort of conceit of the podcast is it's, you know, it is a phone conversation between the two of them, and they have a kind of voicemail message tone at the beginning and stuff, which is quite nice. I like it when a podcast has an aesthetic. It's just really, really enjoyable. And actually, there's an episode of the Call Your Girlfriend podcast with Doreen St. Felix on where she talks a bit about like the backstory of the podcast and about what they sort of wanted it to be. And I think they've done a really good job of realizing that vision, actually, because it's uncompromising without feeling stern.
Yeah.
So it doesn't stop to explain things to you. As you say, like, you take notes and you go and read up if you don't know what they're talking about. But neither does it feel like you're being excluded from a conversation.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I feel like excellent. I can't really take the credit for this recommendation because it was already so up your street, but really glad that
definitely
you loved.
A good addition to my weekly listen.
And you should all go and listen, guys. Don't leave us behind, though. we're all so still here. So what about me for next week?
I am going to recommend you the TV show Silicon Valley.
Ooh.
Which I have...
Tech nerds.
...just got into, and it's a sitcom set in Silicon Valley in California, you know, the fabled cradle of tech superstardom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set in what the guy who runs it calls an incubator, but is actually just him letting some dudes crash in his house, who all work at various, like, in junior programming roles at big tech companies. And
that sounds like the bit in The Social Network where they have the pool and everything. Yeah, is it like that?
Yes, it is like that. And the narrative momentum comes from the fact that one of these guys sort of accidentally develops something that then every massive company in Silicon Valley wants to buy.
Okay.
And he ends up forming his own company to try and develop it himself rather than sell the idea on to what is clearly meant to be like Google or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
The main reason I want you to watch this show is because of the character of Jared.
Okay.
Who is played by Zach Woods, who you will know as Gabe from The Office and the slightly weird looking guy in lots of other things. And I just love him. I love him so much.
That is so funny to me because, I mean, I try to refrain from saying things like this, but he's the absolute not for me. In Hot or Not, he is not.
Yeah, I know, but the character of Jared, though, like, he just does it for me.
What a challenge this will be.
I know. Like, Jared is just... He's so well-meaning and he tries so hard and he's the only one who actually knows what he's doing and is doing any work or achieving anything, and yet they still don't invite him to parties.
Okay, I can't wait because I bet we have very differing opinions on this character. I think I'm going to hate him, but I will try and lay that preconception aside and I hopefully will enjoy Silicon Valley.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, including in iTunes, where you could leave us a rating and a review, because it helps other people find the show.
You can get all our back episodes on seriouslypod.com. We're going to announce more events very soon, so make sure you go there and sign up for our newsletter so you're the first to know when tickets are on sale.
Also there on the website, you can find our special episodes on Home Alone, Gilmore Girls, Harry Potter, Love Actually, and Friends.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.